You're listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 23. Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell. Today on the show, we welcome Götz Giebel. Götz is a consultant on animal fibers, the sourcing of raw materials, top making and yarn, as well as treatment, knitting solutions and supply chain concepts. Götz is also the president of Interwool Labs. Welcome, Götz. It's great to have you on the show today. How are you?
Yeah, hi, Elizabeth. Nice to talk to you and thanks for inviting me to your podcast session.
Great. I so much appreciate your time. I gave a very short introduction about yourself, so please tell us more about your career and the work that you do in the wool industry today.
Okay, thank you. My time in the wool industry goes back about 30 years, and I started in the, at that time, so-called traditional wool trading business in Bremen with one of the larger trading companies. After that, I moved for about a year to Australia and New Zealand, learning about raw material, early stage processing and scouring mills. And I took the advantage of checking out the beautiful countries and sceneries, of course. Later on, I worked at BWK, Bremer Wollkämmerei, which was the large German top maker. Unfortunately, it closed some years ago. They also had a mill in Australia called GWC, Geelong Wool Combing. And after my 7 years with this company, I moved on to Südwolle, a large worsted yarn spinner in Germany, with subsidiaries in Poland, China at that time. Nowadays they have moved on and have established some further mills. After that, I decided to do my own business and do consulting now from raw material to garment stage. So this is a pretty broad business area, but all is really focused around wool, because wool is a special fiber with a lot of know-how needed to certain people, and I try to bridge to the industry this know-how gap in certain cases. I hope this gives some quick overview of what I've been doing.
Yes, thank you, Götz. And I think you're one of those many examples who have traveled around the world because of wool. So sometimes wool is really brings us to the, all these lovely destinations all around the world.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And wool is very similar to wine. You find it where you find the nice wine growing areas as well, which is Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and the South American countries with Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, and a little bit of Brazil, and then America as well.
Yeah, I never looked at it that way, but that's true, yes. And well, now that you are a consultant, what kind of challenges do companies have with which you then help them? Give us some examples, please. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's about the rapid changes of requirements, I would say. It is about the certification processes for raw material or the various supply chain options, the many fairs for people to attend these days, and the permanent expectation of newness, if it's new fibers, treatments, or technologies. I think this is probably the biggest challenge for the industry and myself these days.
Yes, no, that's true. We always need to constantly innovate. So for sure, that keeps you very busy. And one thing you mentioned in your introduction, because you worked so many years at Südwolle, you mentioned the word worsted yarn. And that brings me to my next question. Can you give us a little bit of a basic overview of what we should know about wool yarn?
Well, there's, of course, different categories, like the worsted yarn, which is the yarn you find in woven fabric and business suits, in sweater yarn mostly, and in the outdoor market, where we have a lot of circular knitted products, for instance. And then there's, of course, the other processes like woolen yarn, which lacks of one processing step that makes yarn a bit more fluffy, more hairy on the outside, but also gives a nice product. With regard to the worsted yarn, you have sort of the top end of the spinning process here, which is sort of the involves the most technology, really. In principle, it is just a drafting process, as we know from many, many years ago, hundreds or thousands of years ago, where people were just taking a bit of wool and picking a couple of fibers and twisting them. And this is really what is happening in the modern industry, of course, very professional, with high accuracy to get very nice and even yarn spun to have beautiful fabrics or knitwear produced.
And what kind of products would you use the woolen yarns for?
Well, the woolen yarn is also for a sweater business, but it's a bit more lower category, I could say. There is some nice yarns, of course, some high quality yarns available, but it's not as suitable for the many products as worsted yarn is. It's let's call it a niche product, a pretty big niche. These yarns are usually cheaper and they are made from the shorter woods.
Mm-hmm. And you find
quite a lot of blends there.
Okay. And if you buy wool knitting yarn for, you know, knitting your own sweater, would that be then a woolen yarn?
Technically, it could be the woolen yarn, but very often it's also the worsted yarn.
Ah, okay. So it's important to know the difference between worsted and woolen. That's what I take away from this question. And when you talk, when you think of designers who want to work with wool, and they are at a fair where they can pick out their fabric, what kind of questions should the designer be asking about the yarn when they talk to their fabric manufacturer?
Well, most important is really to explain to the spinner what the requirements are and for what kind of product and fabric they are looking for yarn, to understand the balance of hand feel, of strength, of elasticity, and options about blendings, and of course costings or treatments. So this is quite important to understand. So the right consultancy for the right yarn could be given.
Mm-hmm. And also, let's talk a little bit about fiber mixtures. You just mentioned that earlier when you talked about woolen yarns. Can you give us an example where it makes sense to mix fibers and not be using 100% wool for certain products?
Mm-hmm. Well, wool, of course, is a very nice product in itself, and it has an excellent range of products where it's used in 100%. But since the market opened strongly for the outdoor industry, blends have become more interest, because it opens more room, it creates new and additional markets and opportunities, and a broader use in the product ranges. Let's say high tenacity or strength is needed for some of the fabrics when you go out in sports and do some extreme things. That alone may not be enough to be provided by wool. So you could perhaps have some coarse spun yarn where you have a filament wrapped with wool, delivering additional strength. You still have the hand feel of wool on the outside. Or alternatively, you do some intimate blending where you have fiber to fiber blending in the yarn, with polyester or nylon or other fibers to overcome some strength issues or performance issues. On the other side, people are looking for moisture wicking away from the skin. In that case, also some products may be of assistance, especially if there's extreme sports done and people need some superior technical functions, call it that.
And do you see, is there any trend towards a certain other fiber to be blended with wool?
I think there are so many fibers right now. What has become very good for marketing is always if there's other alternative so-called natural fibers. Tencel has been very strong promoting this idea, but not everything is suitable for each product. So it's really about the idea, about the performance, about the functionality behind. And I would not say one is better than the other. Each can find a logical and suitable place in whatever product. And in the end, it also goes back to costs. How much can a product, or what is the value, the possible value, sales price for a product?
So, I guess they are really, that fibers, I guess, complement each other and sometimes give a better result by mixing blends. Although, of course, me personally, I'm always a fan of 100% wool.
Yes, correct. I mean, as I said before, 100% wool has its place in many categories. It's absolutely great, but there is sometimes some logic to change the product composition and to move on, as I said, for strength issues. Particularly if you think about socks, you very often have some nylon to keep them together, but you don't need it. Yeah, you can have also 100% wool socks.
Okay. And let's move on to another area that you offer services on, and that is supply chain concepts. And lately there has been a very high interest from brands to know exactly where their wool is coming from. Can you explain us what are the challenges along the supply chain to make wool traceable back to source?
Well, I think this applies more and more to manufacturers of any product today. Consumers are more critical or concerned and interested. They want to be informed. So I think this is why this has become quite an important issue. At the marketing side, I think it's even opening the possibility to explain a product in more detail, to create a story around it, to connect the wool farmer in remote areas, even with brands and the consumers. Wool, we can say, is a premium fiber if we look at the pricing and how it's sold. And it has got a lot to offer, so it's great if that can be all explained. And this is a way of doing it. A challenge is the process to ensure a proper transaction through the supply chain, through the many steps in the chain. There can be, I think, up to 10 different companies involved in the transaction, from raw material to a garment in the shop, for instance. So it is important that we have sophisticated systems installed with high credibility of the certification. There's a few good systems already available, but they're all somewhat different and therefore sometimes creating a bit of irritation and kind of intransparency to consumers, because they don't really understand what is the right, what is the best way of getting it certified.
Yeah, I think that's also what I learned from looking at this topic of traceability, is that wool is so unique in a way that the supply chain is very long, as you just said, and very complex. And also that a lot of companies blend different types of wool to achieve the best, like, wool top for a certain product. So that also makes it more complicated. Is that right, as I understood it?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, blending, we can go back to my wine example, happens there as well, and it doesn't mean a negative. It sometimes has actually quite a lot of advantages. And apart from blending the many farms, because only very, very, very few large farms can offer a big quantity of wool product of the same specifications to ensure a larger volume, which are effective in production. So by production reasons already, you have to put many farms together to create a decent size processing batch, for instance. And in many cases, also different origins get blended. That adds to the complication.
Mm-hmm. And coming back to the wool supply chain, do you see any changes and developments that will happen over the next 5 years? Any trends that we should look out for?
Well, I think if it comes to the supply chains, I believe this will progress. There's more and more people looking at it. We must not forget wool is a very small category. It's about 1% of all fibers used in textile production is wool. So from that side, it's also not so complicated to have this traceability established in one way or the other. It needs to be simple, but I'm sure we will see some major changes here. I'm not able to give you the answer and say it will be this system or that system. I think it's a growing process with some growing pains, of course.
I also mentioned in the introduction that you are currently the president of Interwool Labs. Give us a little bit of an overview what Interwool Labs is and what it does for the wool industry.
Interwool Labs is basically part of IWTO, the International Wool Textile Organization, and it had been set up to arrange the harmonization of wool testing for length and fineness measurements. And what happens in Interwool Labs is, which is actually a non-profit organization, that twice a year samples are sent out for testing to the member laboratories, which is about 100 worldwide now. And then we do some reference testing and establish sort of the true result as a benchmark for each laboratory to understand how good or how poor they are testing, if they are in or outside the set tolerances. And each member then gets an accreditation stamp if they have passed these tests.
And I guess that shows again how complicated wool is, because it's a natural fiber. You always need to test, which probably you don't have to do with synthetics, because you exactly produce what you need. But with wool, you always need to test exactly the different qualities and be very precise on that.
Correct. There's always quite a bit of variation in each wool fleece from one sheep already. And if you combine many, many fleeces from many, many sheep, of course, the range gets broader, and therefore the range is wider. For high quality production, of course, you like to aim at a very tight variation to ensure best quality. So testing is important, and also in the commercial life it is important. So if someone sells a certain fineness or certain length, the other party buying it wants to be sure that they get what they have been offered.
Great, good. Thank you so much for giving us this little overview about yarns and also now about Interwool Labs. Before we wrap up, what is the best way for people who want to know more about your work, and how can they get in contact with you?
Well, of course, by email anytime or by phone, and of course through direct contact is at the many fairs I visit.
Yes, that's true. I do bump into you at all those different fairs, so that is a very good occasion. And we will make sure to link to your website in the show notes so that it's very easy for people to get in contact with you. Well, thank you, Götz, so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and I wish you all the best.
Yeah, I thank you very much for this opportunity, and good luck for your other podcasts.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode with Götz Giebel. If you want to find out more about Götz and his business, please visit the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/023. Once again, all information can be found at elizabethvandelden.com/023. We love that you're listening to this podcast. Make sure you also connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. See you there, and bye for now.